Hey listeners, welcome to our podcast, where we drink really tasty coffee and we bring you the stories of people whose lives have been changed by God. We believe there is wisdom and learning from each person's story. So wherever you are, whatever you're doing, relax and enjoy the conversation. This is Brewing Narrative. Everyone out there on Facebook, I don't have it pulled up right now, so I'm going to kind of know that other people are watching just besides us four, but welcome everyone to an episode of Brewing Narrative. I'm joined, as I see it, the upper left corner by Mr. Matt Hernando.
Hey!
bottom left corner, Ryan Ruggers, and our producer, James. What's up,
you guys? What's up?
And then our special guest for this evening, Mr. Clint Hill from Tulsa. What's up, dude?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for literally coming on. You know, I thought all of us, given the current situation, are very familiar with Zoom. And I thought that there was a raise your hand button. I'm not seeing it now for you.
Yeah, you got to go to the where'd it go? There was one.
Yeah, I mean, we could just do it old school and just literally.
Yeah.
You can clap. Yeah, and
oh, okay. How did you get that?
Or you can give a thumbs up.
You go down to reactions.
Oh, reactions. Okay. Cool. Yeah. All right. Well, we may use that.
For you guys that didn't know, Landon's a grandpa. That's his nickname.
Yeah. Before we came on, I was asking Ryan how to post a link in my bio on Instagram because I couldn't figure it out.
Yeah. And when we have our meetings, we all have our iPads and MacBooks, and Landon's over here with a pen and paper writing down in his planner.
Mm-hmm. I'm a planner guy. Don't listen to him. I'm a planner guy. I like planners.
Come on. Coming from the guy that has every Apple product.
Yeah, I know. I like old-fashioned writing it down. So.
Yeah. No shame. Well, I guess we'll start out with coffee. So I think we're all drinking something, right?
Yes.
Something.
Right. So,
I'm drinking water.
let me start off. So I actually wanted to take this opportunity to kind of do something a little different with what I'm drinking, and I'll explain. So a lot of times on the show, we'll talk about like what to look for when you go and buy coffee. So given kind of the situation and then just wanting to kind of save money, I have been going to Whole Foods lately and looking at their coffee section, and they actually have a really great selection of coffee. And so I bought some Intelligentsia today. So this is not a single origin coffee. It's actually a blend. Nothing wrong with blends. It actually is. It's a couple of different coffees from Peru, but it's like a breakfast blend. But the key thing that we look for is it does have a roasted on date. So it was roasted last month. Still tasty. It's got, you know, tasting notes and stuff like that. But this was only like $13. So if you're wanting to not buy like a $20 bag of coffee, which is what I'd normally buy, go to like Whole Foods or something like that. You can get something a lot. I just got judged. Yeah, that's normally what I spend. You guys do too. Don't laugh. Yeah, you can like save some money and buy something that's still really tasty. So that's what I'm drinking on. It's really good. I had to brew it a second time to get it right. But what about you guys?
Yeah, I'll go. So I've been posting about this one on social media. I'm on my like last couple ounces of my Onyx. It's Onyx is probably like one of the best coffee shops that out there, in my opinion, top five at least. They do everything right from top to bottom. Shamelessly, I laughed, but literally this is probably the first time in a long time that I bought this coffee, which is also $20. But you know, they were doing free shipping, so like it was kind of like, oh, all right, I balanced it out kind of thing. But this coffee, I mean, I've brewed it maybe five different ways in the last week since I've gotten it. And I think the the Chemex does it the best, in my opinion. I don't know how familiar you guys are with Chemexes, but Chemexes tend to be my favorite. But I am going to try to do it on the French press. That was the one that a lot of people recommended me do. And, you know, people are working from home these last couple weeks, and they somehow don't have time to make coffee, and French presses tend to be like the time saver. So I think I'm going to do it for the gram.
Do it.
Yeah.
How long does the French press take to make one portion? It's pretty similar.
Like 4 minutes?
Pretty much the same, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, it's just faster. Like.
Really?
Yeah,
that's right. You don't have to wait in for and
those kinds. Yeah.
Yep.
Ryan, what are you drinking over there, buddy?
I'm actually sipping on some tea today.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Explain your process there.
All right. So normally what you're supposed to do is you just steep the tea. So I'm drinking Cascara tea that, if you don't know, is the cherry of the coffee. And you can brew that as a tea. And normally you just dump it in a Chemex and you pour the water in there and you kind of just let it steep for 4 minutes. I wanted to try something new today and see if I could grind it like coffee and pour it over. And, you know, long story short, I ended up just steeping the tea anyways. So it didn't work out, but that's what we're sipping on today.
At least it was good.
Steeping narrative.
Yeah, there you go.
I drink water.
Water. All right, be healthy. Nice.
Any more description you need?
H2O.
Sugar-free.
Gluten-free, dairy-free, vegan-free.
And it's free at most cubby shop.
So. All the frees.
Mm. There you go.
Clint, what about you, my friend?
You're going to shame me. You guys are like eating caviar and I'm eating like goldfish crackers. Right. I am drinking Folgers decaf.
I knew it.
I brewed over in my coffee pot that probably hasn't been cleaned since 2015. And it's got an oak of mildew and no, it's very strong, but I mean it's decaf because I'm an old man. If I drink regular, I'm
not
lying, so.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
We've talked about
fill out an AARP card. So
we've talked about decaf before, and you know, there's really no shame in that. So
thank you, guys.
Coffee, the way you like it. So
we'll just call it your coronavirus juice.
That's right. That's right. So is the Folgers where I should feel the shame? Is that where that
should happen? Yeah, just the Folgers part.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So, yeah.
Hey,
I had a very nice aroma when I... Yeah,
Folgers in your cup?
Yeah. It is.
me and my sister sometimes, we like to... I don't know, like, who does this or where it started, but... being from, you know, small town Kentucky, and it's everywhere, but we would imitate. I think there's someone that we know or a couple that we know to where, like, we've heard them say, if it ain't Folgers, I don't want it. So a lot of times that's like my go-to. And if it ain't Folgers, I don't want it. So.
Well, yeah.
Don't worry, Clint. Landon and I will educate you.
Thank you. Thank you. I need to be educated in coffee. I actually I used to like work on the railroad, and on the railroad we had sludge. It wasn't coffee; it was just straight sludge.
I know.
And it was. I think it ruined me. I don't think I can go back.
Really?
So, I love coffee. I love it, but I always want that like that strong sludge.
Put hair on your chest. Yeah.
My grandpa. Mm-hmm. My grandpa is not about it at all. My grandma, they have a Keurig. And he'll wait for her to make her coffee, and he'll reuse that same cup. He's like, if you can't see through it, then you shouldn't be drinking it.
Yeah, it's just thrifty. You know, that's thrifty.
Wow. Well, I guess without further ado, we'll just kind of jump into our conversation for tonight. So, you know, Clint, we've been really fortunate to, you know, we got to have Donnie Dillon on the show at Family Vacation. You know, we got to talk to him, and we all know Donnie, you know, through Campus Ministry United and seeing him once, sometimes twice a year for different events. And for me, and probably for these guys too, you know, just getting to know you the same way through Campus Ministry United, you know, and so I guess just to start, before we kind of just talk about where you're from and just, you know, maybe your upbringing, like, what do you do right now? So, like, who are you?
Well, right now I am in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I work with the Park Church of Christ. We're around, I mean, we're fairly large church. We have about 1600 members that come on Sunday. And so they're, it's, we're up here, and I'm the evangelism minister for the park. And so, yeah.
Very cool.
Yep. And I'm married. I've been married now for 14 years to Kelsey, and I got two kids, Asher and Lillian. Asher is 8 and Lily is 6. And I have a Scottish deer hound that I've had for about 5 years. She's a dog. So,
yeah. Awesome. My dog. Very cool.
What?
Yeah. Thanks. My dog.
yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm feeling the jokes tonight. So yeah, I guess just like, you know, where are you from, originally? 'Cause I know you're not from Tulsa.
No, I'm not.
Just kind of take us back, like, you know, where are you from? What were some of your earliest memories? How I heard it described for me recently, you know, when you're, and this is like just a useful tool for like just communicating in general. When you're talking to someone about where you're from, I remember the term like paint a picture. And, you know, so sometimes the detail is really good. It really helps to like take, it helps someone to kind of be there and they can really visualize that. So like, kind of paint us a picture of like what childhood was like for you and just the things that you saw around.
I was born in Texas. I was born in Amarillo, and you know, and then we moved around when I was 10. We moved to New Mexico, and we moved around quite a bit as a family. But my family, I have a pretty hard past, full of abuse and things, but my parents and my family, we're actually very close. It wasn't because of my parents. My parents and I actually have a fantastic relationship. We've always had a fantastic relationship. You know, and so my dad is actually, he's a guy that I still call and just talk to my mom. And so I have a great relationship with them. And then, you know, my first memory was a pretty unpleasant one. I remember my first memories of abuse. I was abused from the time I was 4 to the time I was 7. So, and that really shaped me to be pretty troubled. It wasn't all. I mean, I'm saying some of that stuff. I also had a very happy childhood as well. I remember we had a creek in the back of our house, and when we lived in Amarillo, it was a place called Boys Ranch, Texas, and we lived back there, and we had this like little like swampy boggy area in the back. It may have been just like an alley with a bunch of greenery, but to me it was a swamp, you know. That's what I remember. And I remember me and my dad being on a four-wheeler going down that alley, and a log like flipped us over. And so like we were literally on the four-wheeler and it flipped over and the four-wheeler was on top of us. My dad's legs were underneath it. And so this is one of my first memories. And this is also the memory I realized, don't mess with my dad. He flipped strong. Okay. So I was sitting underneath him. I crawled out and I said, do I need to go get help? I remember being like 5 or 6 or something like that. And my dad was like, no, I got this. And he just did a 1, 2, 3 and he pushed himself and the four-wheeler like on top. Wow. I've never seen anything like it before in my life. And I realized at that moment, my dad is always going to be stronger than me.
That's crazy.
He is, is like the, and so, yeah, so I come from like a really fun family. And so, but you know, I did have abuse and I did have things in my life that, that really affected me negatively. You know, I tried to really hurt my mom and my sister when I was a kid. That ended me getting into a home. I was really suicidal around the age of 10. You know, and so, I mean, and so it just, I just remember it was a lot of abuse, from 4 to 7, then once when I was 14 and then once again, when I was 19, and all of it were by men. When I was 19, I was a comedian in Charleston, South Carolina, when it happened. And, you know, he put a roofie in my drink and, you know, and it started, you know, that gets into your head where you feel like, man, that's all I'm used for. And I made the conscious decision around age 10, 11. I remember it being in the home, so it was probably 10. And I don't know how long I was in the home. To me, it felt like 64 years, but I know that's not right. I know that that number is not correct. It was probably along the lines of a week or two, but to a 10-year-old, that's forever, you know? And right. And so I remember my parents getting me out. I remember what we did after I got out of the mental institution as a kid. We went to go see Beauty and the Beast, and I remember sitting there with my family watching Beauty and the Beast, and that, that movie actually means a lot to me, the cartoon, because of that, you know, and so, and we didn't have a lot of money growing up. We weren't like necessarily like dirt poor, but we did, I mean, at one time we had a lot of people living with us, and I shared a room with my sisters till like sixth grade. So, I mean, it was, it was, you know, it was, I mean, we, you know, we had a lot of fun living together.
Yeah.
And then we moved, in New Mexico, we moved, to Melrose, New Mexico. And that's a really small town. I'm talking about literally, the crossings. Last time I was there, about maybe 500 people on a Sunday morning, you know, somewhere around there. That would be the whole size of my town. That, really? That was that. It was a very small town growing up. And so, yeah. So, you know, I'm an old country boy. I worked like, I've branded cattle and driven tractors and all these other things, done a lot of country stuff. I think that's why Folgers, it appeals to my country roots, you know,
and runs in your blood.
So, you know, but yeah. So, I mean, my past is, it has a lot of hardships, a lot of drugs, yeah, a lot of alcohol. Yeah. I mean, I did my first drug. I was around, it was 99. So when I was, I was like a eighth grader or something like that, freshman, somewhere around there. And
yeah.
And so, and then after that, it was just an onslaught of stuff to just try to numb pain. And, yeah, and I did that pretty successfully until I was in my teenage years. I graduated early. I hurt myself pretty bad playing football, and I couldn't go back. And I wanted to play. I had dreams of playing like college ball and all these things, and that just never panned out. And so I ended up doing what all former athletes do. I went to the theater, and I ended up getting a full ride scholarship to theater to a university. And I ended up doing like professional acting.
That's really
professional
cool.
Acting led to like dancing. You know, I remember doing some like summer doing ballet for Texas, the musical drama. It's a big drama out in Texas, getting paid for it. And then from there, I did stand-up comedy. I loved the theater life. I really liked what it was. And I traveled all across the nation doing that. From 18 years old was my first comedy gig. From 19 is in Charleston, South Carolina. That was the last time the guy roofied me was in Charleston. And then going all the way to like LA and other things. And I had a lot of gigs in LA that guy saw my show. And so he was really interested in me doing some big name shows like Will and Grace and ER and another show called Blind Date, which, I mean, you know, it was kind of like, it's not a very good show. And anyway, but,
that's the bullet there.
You know, yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I didn't do those shows. I ended up being intoxicated, and I missed all three of those, the starts of the shows, and I missed the gigs. And if you miss a gig in that, you're kind of branded. And after that, I was just, it wasn't good. I remember walking down Hollywood or Rodeo Drive. There's a Burger King outside of there, kind of outside the nice part of Rodeo Drive, kind of like where it's starting to get into the bad part. There's Burger King right there, and I saw a Whopper, half-eaten Whopper in outside of Burger King, and I ate it. And then I remember calling my dad afterwards, like, Dad, I just want to come home. And and throughout all that process, I did, you know, like, I did a year of school. I did, when I was a comedian, I did, it wasn't online school. That wasn't really a thing. I'm that old. And it was more like they let me go do whatever I needed to do, and they didn't count absences. So it was more of an understanding more than online school or anything.
Yeah.
And so, and then from my second year of school, I got on the railroad. My dad helped me get back from LA, and then he got me on the railroad, and it was on the railroad where, I won, worked all the live long day. And then I also got to know like other people, and a guy asked me to go to a young adult camp, and so I went with him to a young adult camp. I actually lost a bet to go on that, and he I was on my way to, it was like a family vacation. I was on my way to my first family vacation type experience. It wasn't called family vacation. I forgot what it was called. And I was an atheist. I didn't believe in anything. And I was traveling with this girl, and she didn't really want to go, and I didn't really want to go. And so I was like, what do you do when you don't want to go to a Christian thing? We decided to go to a casino before we went and decided to go gambling. And then we went to the thing, and that was where I was like introduced to not just Jesus. I was introduced to people who wanted to be like Jesus.
Yeah. You know?
And my family believes, they're believers. But I never really, that was kind of them. That wasn't me, you know? And I never saw people that were really my age, really truly wanting to follow him with every ounce of them. And I met the guy that brought me to the retreat named Dave Ortega. He's one of the guys why I became a believer. And from there, I made the big switch from atheism to agnosticism, where atheism is like you don't believe in God. And then agnostics mean is kind of like you don't know if there is a God, you know. And then I started reading. I remember leaving that camp thinking maybe there is a God. And I never forget Scott Jarvis, one of the campus ministers there. He came up to me and he said, hey, you can be a laziest. You can be an atheist. Just don't be a lazy atheist. I was like, oh. And I was like, what's a lazy atheist? He said, do the work. So from that, I started like reading the Quran, and I read like the Book of Mormon, and I read all these, that some of the writings of Buddha and all these other things. And it was just like, you know, all of them had something to say about Jesus. You know, all of them said that he was either a God, or he was a prophet, or he was a good teacher. And so I was like, you know, I'll see, you know, and the Gospels is really the only thing that Jesus talks about who he is. So I read the Gospels, and I was like, there's something to this. And then next thing I know, I wasn't on the railroad anymore. I was in school to become a minister. And then the first day of class going back to school, the teacher went over Acts chapter 2. And he talked about how, you know, if you want to believe, you're going to be baptized. And I was like, what is that? What's baptism? And he was like, let's talk after class. So we talked after class. The guy who ended up inviting me to that camp is the guy that ended up baptizing me that day. And it was it was pretty neat. It was pretty neat.
Pretty experience. Cool. So,
yeah. That's kind of my Cliff Notes version of my life. So.
Well, there's definitely a lot there. And I think, you know, For us, one thing that we really like to do is, you know, just kind of go back. You're kind of frozen there, Clint. Is he frozen on your guys' screen?
There you go.
Oh, okay. There you go. Sorry.
Went in for coffee and didn't stop for a breath.
One thing that one thing that we really like to do on this show is just kind of go back and talk about, I don't know, just kind of talk about, you know, just kind of the different steps and different seasons of life, because, you know, a lot of what you described, I mean, in childhood and middle school and high school and, you know, college and just all the different kind of stuff, like, you know, before coming to know God, like all of that stuff plays such a major role in shaping, you know, who you are and the way that you see the world. Yeah. And one thing that I was, and I'll try to do my best to like pause just briefly, like after you talk, just to kind of give you guys a chance to say something, but something that really, and maybe you guys can comment on this, cause I think we've seen this with a few of our guests, but something that really struck me was, you know, you obviously mentioned a lot of really, really difficult, heavy things like abuse and, you know, just how that abuse then kind of made its way into your behavior and then how you began to treat other people. But at the same time, you said you had a really good childhood. And I think that's really interesting, because as you look back, you can see so much darkness, but then also being able to see such a contrast with like, man, I had a great dad and a great mom and a great family, and I've got these great memories as a child. And obviously as grown people, like when we look at kids or our kids or the way that we wish that it was for us, like we wish that it could have just been all these great memories. But it is so sad, I think, a lot of times, just to look back and to see, you know, such darkness being contrasted with that. You know, it's like, well, become woke to like the things of the world until later on, but it's just sad when you have that as a child. But then so people share stories like that, they're like, man, my whole childhood was terrible. But it's interesting to hear that you had good times as well.
Well, you know, like I had to realize, like take my dad for instance, my dad's one of my heroes. After learning everything that he had to go through, he was a house parent at the boys' ranch we were at that I was abused at. And to hear the gruff and the just some of the stuff that he had to do to protect me changed my outlook. Where I saw for a long time, I was like distance, like that my dad is a distance, was a distance guy. It was like, nah, he was protecting me like crazy. And I didn't even know that fully until like about 5 years ago when we just had an open conversation about it. And I didn't realize that I had a lot of like kind of resentment towards my dad. But after like talking about it and getting it out in the open, that resentment changed to understanding. You know, like I remember my dad talking to me one time. He's like, I'm a 26-year-old guy. You know, I'm a 26-year-old guy and this happened to my kid. What do you do? What would I have done at a 26-year-old? I wouldn't have handled it nearly as good as my old man did.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, so I, my dad's one of my heroes for that instance. And my mom too, you know, it's just, they were young and they were put in scenarios. My mom now talks to parents whose kids have been abused, to try to help them through the process. Cause there's a lot of things with parents going, I should have protected, I should have done this, and I should have. And my mom is, I, you know, one of my heroes in that aspect. It goes like, you know, there's nothing you could have done. If they're lying to you, you're working off information you don't have. And I think we want to control that. Right. We want to control how much we hate, and we want to control that with them. But we just got to understand that we're all human beings. We're all going to make mistakes. Right. And that doesn't excuse other things, but.
Yeah. Do you ever like look at that situation and think like, you know, what if that stuff didn't happen? Like, would you still look at life the same way?
You know, that's a good question. I'd be lying if I said I didn't, you know, going, where would I be if I didn't do that? But it was because of my vulnerability that I think makes me a powerful man of God. It's because of those bad instances where God has taken these horrible things and he's made beautiful flowers. I think that's one of the best things. I love working from home. You can bring it on.
That's awesome.
You know,
but,
hey, buddy.
You know, like. but, you know, I'd be lying to say if that never crossed my mind. But then I think of the reality of it is because of those things that happened to me, Jesus has used my story to reach that many more people. and understanding, and you know, and I every time I talk about it publicly, one person that I never knew came up to me and would go, "Me too, man. How do you get over it?"
Yeah,
and we can start that path of healing all over again.
Yeah.
So yeah, but there are times when, like, I mean, when Asher turned 4 years old, when it happened to me, I had to go see some counselors. I was in a really overprotective mode, you know, of not wanting anything to happen to my kid. I'll never forget a good friend of mine going, "You are not God. You cannot control it. But what you are controlling is you are robbing him of the joy of being with his dad." And I was like, oh, that just hit me. That struck my heart. And I was like, you know, I got to let this go. And just trust that if it does happen to my kids, I can help them through it.
Yeah.
I pray that never happens, you know? So,
Yeah. I mean, and that's like the scary, I mean, I'm not, you know, I don't have kids but you know, I can already just kind of, I already begin to think about what that's going to be like about just like kind of, you know, if me and my wife do have kids, like what that's going to be like, just trying to protect them from everything, but you know, you just can't. And, I don't know, I'm sure that's like a helpless kind of feeling, but that is really cool that, you know, you are already kind of thinking about, I mean, obviously, hopefully that conversation never has to be had, but that's just a difficult conversation to have in general, even just with a friend or, you know, someone that just chooses to confide in you and say, "Hey, this happened to me." Like that can be really difficult and awkward kind of in and of itself, but I can't really what that's like with a child.
But
so
it is helpless. You said it was helpless, and you're right, it's helpless. But when you give it up to Christ and you give it up to God, that helpless turns to hope.
Exactly.
You know, and I know with me, like you nailed it on the head. Like helpless is the right word, but when you surrender it, that can turn to hope very quickly. And then people, I mean, not just people, me, I believe this because I see the evidence in others, you know, like, I don't know about you guys, but when I see God work in other people's lives, my first reaction every time is God looking at God going, "You're real. You really are real." And it's like a self-discovery every time someone else discovers it with me. So.
Yeah, that's really cool. Do you get Ryan or James? Do you guys have
any? I was just gonna say, like, I mean, even now, you know, with everything that's going on with the virus and stuff, like, you know, we can do as much as we can, but in the end, like, we don't have control over it, you know, and like, I'm not a parent either, but, you know, I can get a feeling of that now. Like, you can do as much as you want for your kids, but in the end, like, you can't protect them 100%. And like, you know, once you kind of understand that and like, you know, I don't have control and it's not up to me, and you kind of just have to come to peace with that and find peace in the uncertainty, you know, and, you know, once you do that, like, anxiety and fear and like all this other stuff, like, you know, it doesn't run your life anymore. Like, you can go and you can be at peace knowing that, you know, somebody else is in control.
Right.
No. Yeah. And how freeing is it when you talk to others and they're like, "Me too." And you're like, "Oh, yeah. I'm not the only weirdo in the room anymore." Yes. You know?
Yeah.
There's four of us. I love that.
Yeah. Clint, I know you like C.S. Lewis. Mere Christianity. Have you read many of his other works, or?
Yeah, I read quite a bit of his work.
So we actually posted a quote one day by him where it was something like, I think he said friendship. I think it was like friendship is made when one of you says, "Oh, you know, two," you know, it was like something like that. That's like a really well-known quote of his, but you know, that's when relationship really like kicks into the next gear, is when you begin to, just relate on the deeper levels, the things that you've experienced that you're not sure if anyone else has experienced. And I know for both us, you know, Matt at the church that he's at, and me and Ryan and James and you, like, I think that we are very fortunate and very blessed to be a part of churches that are really open and honest about the things that we go through. And, you know, we don't want to hide any of that, because we know that if we did, we'd be robbing, we'd be robbing others of finding healing and restoration. And so we just want to be as open and honest with that as possible, you know? So,
Aren't we also ashamed of the gospel when we're ashamed of the dark parts in our own life? You know, like, I don't want to be ashamed of the gospel. I want the gospel to, I think it's in those worst moments. I think that's why Paul over and over and over brought it up. Like saying, I used to be a transgressor and I used to persecute and kill Christians. I think that's why he brought it up over and over again, because he's just, he doesn't want to rob the gospel of its true glory, of what it can do in others' lives. And so, I couldn't agree with you. Yeah, CS, that's my love language right there. C.S. Lewis.
Yeah,
I think
awesome.
I want to say that quote's from The Great Divorce, but I got to look.
So. Yeah, could be. I started reading Mere Christianity. Probably my favorite work by him is, the book of, what's it called? The book about the demons.
Screw tape letters.
Yeah, I don't know why that escaped my mind, but that's fascinating book.
I got something to show you for that. All right, because we're on a video show. I do woodworking. I've been woodworking like 6 years. This piece right here is called Screw Tape. That's what it's called. And the reason why is because far away it looks really nice. It looks beautiful. But the closer you get to it, you can see all those wormholes and all of those things, and it's taken. And it actually, when it's there, it sits right next to my Screw Tape Letters book, and talking about how sin from far away looks wonderful, but when you get close and you examine it, it's full of holes and weaknesses. But that's it's funny you mentioned that. That's my favorite piece, and it's called Screw Tape. So
that's cool. I'm glad you shared that with us.
So
something that you mentioned as a part of your story was, being an atheist before becoming an agnostic. But you experienced the abuse early on, and I know I've heard you mention before that, you know, you kind of, I think you fully like realized that you were an atheist maybe later on. But when were you ever thinking about kind of the spiritual matters, or were you ever thinking about a creator earlier in your life, maybe closer to when, I mean, you experienced abuse kind of spaced out and even to when you were old, were you thinking about, man, if there is like a higher being or anything like that, what could he possibly want with me after having gone through this? Did you ever think about those things closer to the initial abuse, or did thoughts like that just come later on?
I can honestly say every time I got closer to God, when I was about to get close to God, I would have experience that ran me away. Like I remember being 14 and I wanted to know who God was, and it always revolved around a girl. A girl went to church, so therefore I went to church. And I went to this church, and it was a speak in tongues church, and it was, you know, it just kind of, it just really turned me off. People screaming at you, you need to do this, you know, and I'm just like, I don't need to do anything. This is America, you know? that was my response to everything. But I remember like getting close to God and then, or getting closer to being open about God, and then just being let down completely by the church. And that happened probably over and over again. Every time I wanted to get close, I remember one time me and this girl, we were dating at the time, and she was close to God. So I was like, therefore I'm going to get close to God, 'cause she's close to God. And I remember like she was saying something, and I was like, well, you know what the scriptures say? 'Cause I was actually reading the scripture that time. She's like, and she's like, what? And I was like, well, you know, that you need to hand it over to him and not, you know, and she got mad at me and dumped me the next day and all this stuff. And I was like, man, that's a weird reason, you know? And so it was just like, okay, anytime I got close to God, something would happen to where I'd just be like, I'm out. And the next time I really think God just broke, I mean, the last time, God just broke down the door. You know, I literally, from being, from quitting the railroad to starting school, was so fast. And then the next week I met Kelsey, you know, and then the next week is just like God started really doing some amazing things. It was pretty neat. So
that's cool. I had one kind of quick thing to say. I know you were, before I forget to say it, but I know, you know, you had this like past in like theater and that kind of stuff. And you lived in New Mexico. Well, so my brother-in-law, actually, for a couple of summers, actually worked at the Santa Fe Opera. I guess the Opera House.
Okay. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. And he's actually, so he has done, he's a TD, I guess as they call him, technical director. And then he just did his master's from SAUC. And now he's a professor at Transy University, which is near Lexington, or near the University of Kentucky, as a technical director. And he's actually the Juilliard too. So you guys could like talk shop to you guys.
Yeah. He could be a lot more in depth shop than I could.
Well, you guys kind of were on, I mean, Daniel can act if he wants to, but you guys were kind of on the other end of things. But when I heard you talk about that, I was like, man.
What year was he there at Santa Fe Opera?
So that would have been, it was when I was at Lindenwood. So I won't go into detail with the story. My sister and Daniel, they were still dating, or they might have even been engaged. But so he was there and she was in Kentucky. So she like flew to see him. And then this was towards the end of the summer. So they were just going to come back together. So they decided to do, like, they go see the Grand Canyon. Like, they decide to do the long trip back to Kentucky. So it's like almost 20, 25, 30 hours or whatever. And I remember that being, I think, in 2014.
Okay. So I got to sing Carmina Burana with the Santa Fe Symphony around 2002, I believe.
Okay.
And so, gotcha. Yeah. So yeah, I'm a lot older.
You're a lot older. But he loved it. It was an awesome experience.
It was great. Yeah. It was really good.
Yeah. But so, you know, around that time, being what school did you say you were doing the online schooling through?
It was just an understanding schooling. It wasn't online. It was Western Texas University or College. It was in Snyder, Texas. It's a very small town. And so, but I got my degree from Eastern New Mexico University. So.
Okay. And when was that, in kind of on the timeline of things? Cause I know it was
Western Texas or Eastern New Mexico.
You have a degree with like Greek, you know, you.
Yeah. Yeah. I graduated in 2008 with I got a Bachelor of Science, or literally got a BS in religion.
I knew that was coming.
And Greek. And so, yeah, so I have that. And that happened in 2008. Snyder happened around 2002. That era. And so, but I didn't get a degree or anything like that. In fact, my grades tanked pretty bad. So
really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. you can't do understanding schooling and expect to be an AB. You
know? Yeah. That's true. So I guess kind of what I'm hearing a little bit with that, I'm cheating a little bit. So you were on a podcast recently, Clint. Let's be honest. Look it up. It's an awesome episode. But you said that one of the things, now this kind of plays with what we were talking about with being atheist and an agnostic and just kind of, you know, not believing in a God of any sort, or just not knowing. But you read Lee Strobel's Case for Christ.
Yeah.
One of my favorite books. But then also, you know, you have this this degree with the Greek studies, and I know you're a very logical thinker. So is that kind of how you see, do you see God more from the science apologist? I mean, obviously faith, there's a whole conversation on that in terms of, you know, not walking by sight, but like, do you kind of see God maybe from the like apologetics slash science slash educational side of things, or, you know, from like a logical way of seeing things? Because that's kind of how I can be at times.
I think with me viewing God in the scriptures is not just logical, because God does a lot of things that are illogical as well. A man walking on water is illogical.
That's very true.
You know, and so, you know, it was really interesting. You talked about Case for Christ with Lee Strobel. I actually got to have a conversation with Lee Strobel when he came and spoke at the park. And he said, like, I got to drive him, which was really cool. And I got to say, I was an atheist and I read your book. And he's like, oh, that's cool. And he's like, what fact brought you around to Christ? And I said, it wasn't a fact. Because I believe you're working on totally separate fact, like, basis. You know, it's like we got a God who creates the universe and then another thing that creates the universe. And you can tell me all you want about this God and build it up on this logical rock. But if I'm on this platform, it's not going to matter hill of beans to me. Mm-hmm. What's going to have to happen is we are going to have to be broken and brought before. And really what brought me around was a relationship with another guy who didn't want anything from me. Two of my best friends, Dave Ortega and Alan Yarbrough, are guys that just, they always talked about how what God can do in your life. They always, and for a long time, Alan didn't even know I was an atheist. He was just a man being a godly dude. And you know, like, it's not like logical basis for me. Although it is very logical when you start thinking logically. Like take the guy walking on water. If he's God, he can do whatever he wants.
Right. Logic. Yeah. Yeah. That was probably the wrong word to use, because I completely agree with like looking at the Bible and looking at God and his character, like, doesn't really make sense to me. And maybe you guys, Ryan and James and Matt, you guys can speak on this, but like, we've been kind of going through some studies as a church. We've been studying out, the last 2 weeks we studied out grace and faith. And especially when I look at the grace side of things, it's really, really difficult for me to fathom the grace that God does have. Like, those things like don't compute in my head. So it's funny, I use that word logical to describe maybe looking at God from like a, maybe more along like the science side of things. But like, even when I look at like the attributes of like the characteristics of God, like, that's the illogical part to me. I'm like, wait, you're saying that God's got this kind of grace for me? That's nuts. What about you guys? Like, you know, what kind of like beliefs did you guys have like before, coming to know who, you know, before, you know, being in a relationship with God? Like, was it more of like an atheistic side of things, or maybe just like an indifference or not knowing?
Yeah, for me, it's a little bit different, because, like, you know, I grew up in the Catholic Church, and I've always acknowledged that there was something there, like, there was a God. And then even, you know, in some capacity, we did look at some of the, what you're saying, like the logical stuff of it. But, you know, it really wasn't until the grace part of like realizing that, you know, God, like the idea of God is not just an idea, but it's more so like a relationship. And that's kind of where the part of the grace comes in, because like, then it became like more like a two-way street instead of like me reading like a history book about someone before me. And that's kind of like where things changed, is whenever I started looking at it in that perspective.
Yeah. What about you guys, James and Ryan?
I grew up in Thailand, and most, like, I would say 90% of people are believe in Buddhism. That's what they practice back home. And I didn't really know about God until I moved to Oregon, and I went to school there for 2 years, and that's where learn about God. And I think at first I didn't believe it until I actually read the book and then kind of pull the pieces. And then, you know, when it's kind of like a puzzle, like you pull some pieces and then it's painted bigger pictures, right? And then you read it and you kind of look back into your life and it makes sense, right? But some people outside, like if I never read the Bible before, I would never think God is real, you know? And mm-hmm. after I read the book and I see how God is appear in my life, and that's how I become Christian.
Didn't you find like the essence of Buddha? I know when I read it, like I wasn't completely lost, but I felt like it was so unattainable and it was so outlandish, like of fasting for that long and all of these bad things happen to you and just having a positive mentality and how meditating really processes the whole thing. I was completely lost. And mm-hmm. and I think that was my, I mean, other than the fact that it said Jesus was a good teacher, I think that was another thing where I was like, well, he says he's God, so I'm going to go with that one, you know? but I know with Buddha, like I was completely lost in the process because it was unobtainable.
The fact for me is not just that, but also the people who practice that religions. When I was at home, I didn't feel anything. I didn't feel like I can relate it to this kind of stuff. But when I moved here, I see people really practice, and then they believe, and then they do what they said, and that just changed my mind. I think it gave me a chance to see God, to see if he real or not. And yeah.
And Ryan, you know, for you, like, I know that you, like, you grew up in the church, but yeah. even just growing up in the church, like, you're not without, because you eventually, I do think a part of, like, eventually owning your own faith is a part of figuring out, because obviously we're never going to have all the answers, and, you know, we have a lot of questions about just about God himself, but, like, you still to come to that point to where you decide, okay, this is what I believe, even with kind of the doubts and the struggles. But like, what were some of those for you, even just growing up in the church?
Yeah, I mean, I think I kind of have a similar story to Clint in the sense that, like, you know, I had a good family. You know, they had a relationship with God too, but just because you have those things doesn't mean bad things don't happen to you, you know? Yep. And so I experienced abuse. We had to move from Illinois to Missouri under, you know, some difficult circumstances. And like, you know, when you grow up somewhere and you have to move within, I mean, we kind of packed up and moved within a month, you know, so that our family could grow and, you know, be stronger in God. And, you know, there's just many other situations, and, you know, when you go through those types of things, you really start to develop your faith because you see God come through on the other side. And I don't know, it just, I knew about God, I knew what the scriptures said, but it was more knowledge than actually like living it out and like I think trusting it. And just, you know, when you start to actually experience things and you see why you need a relationship with God, you start to develop that faith a little more and trust in him and appreciate his love and his grace and, you know, all of that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think just even like, I mean, even just with Buddhism, like that, I mean, that religion is kind of unique in a sense because it's really it's an atheistic religion pretty much, right? There's yeah. no
there was no God. It's
yeah,
it's a Buddha.
Yeah. And so with that, I mean, I think kind of I think what you were talking about a little bit, Ryan, and you know, I know like Clint, when you kind of did a dive through that, I know for me part of what really led me to God was just understanding my faults, my shortcomings. And it's like, you know, it's like if I was like, oh, I'm going to check out Buddhism, I would know real quick that it wasn't going to work for me, because if I'm left kind of to myself and nothing being above myself, man, like I just feel like it, you know, I'm just going to end up repeating the same cycles and just kind of conforming to the same behaviors because I have no one else or nothing else to really put my trust in, if right. that makes sense. And so I don't know, that was one of the big things for me where I just, man, looking at Jesus and just being like, man, I don't have to just at the end of the day be okay with myself and just place trust in myself because, man, that's just it's a losing battle. So mm-hmm. To know that there was a God that could take on that for me, man, that was a game changer for sure. Yeah. So I guess just kind of bring us up to speed. So you've already kind of told us what you what you're doing now, and you mentioned when you met Kelsey. I know that you guys have not had like a picture perfect relationship. And so if you just kind of want to, because actually one of the first times that I got to hear you speak, you shared a lot on your marriage. And, you know, kind of being like a newly married guy myself, like, you know, marriage is an awesome thing, but you can definitely, I definitely understand how, I mean, it's tough and it takes work. But kind of just share like, what has marriage been like for you guys and maybe what were some of your struggles early on?
I know for a big struggle for us early on was, when I was a kid, I was really good at lying. I got really good at it. And bringing truth telling into our marriage, was pretty hard for me. I looked at, pornography behind Kelsey's back, especially when things got rough. That's what I would run to. And she, because of things in her past, Kelsey was abused. Kelsey was also like, I love to say this, y'all probably heard me say this before, she was a drug dealer in her hometown. She came from a really crazy past. I came from a really crazy past. And when we first got together, I'll never forget, we were falling into sexual sin when we first met. You know, and I was newly baptized. And so I started talking to my campus minister and he said, Clint, what do you think sexual immorality is to you? And I was like, well, I'm not doing anything gay, if that's what you mean. And he went, what does it mean to you? And I said, I just told you my definition. What is it? What does it mean to you? Is it different? I had no clue that was even a sin. Mm-hmm. I didn't know because no one talked to me about what it does to you. And so, and so our relationship was a lot of discovery. You know, when we took that aspect out of it, we were married like 6 months later. and it's been the best ride ever. I mean, Kelsey is one of the most godly, most amazing women that I've ever met, you know? And now our relationship is truly, truly incredible. You know, when I was in pornography, she literally told me, she said, either you get help for dealing with your past issues or we get a divorce. Those are our options. I'm not going to share you with a computer. And I was just like, well, it's not cheating because, you know, and I'd lay out all these lines of why it's not cheating. And then so I got the help. I went through a couple classes. I didn't end up going through Wounded Heart until I went through Wounded Heart, in 2000, I read the book alone in like 2008, which you should never do. Oh my gosh, it was the most depressed I have ever been before in my life. Yeah. I didn't know how to react or anything. So when I went through it, I was floored. You know, with a group of people, and that's what truly I think that's where I got better. I maintained sin from that point to where I didn't sin because I didn't want to mess up Kelsey. I can honestly say after going through Wounded Heart with a group of people is I don't sin because I want to please God, and I realize there's things about me that's not a monster. You know, I'm not a crazy person because I enjoy my wife. You know. And that was a lot of self-processing that I had to realize. I think one of the biggest realizations I got through Wounded Heart was I'm not a monster. And that was a big realization. To others, that's not a big realization. To me, that was life changing. And I haven't looked back from that moment. I remember talking to Kelsey on it. We just started crying. And so my wife now is one of the most amazing women I've ever met. We've had quite a few people because, you know, we're moving up. I mean, actually, today is a 1 month. We're moving our stuff to St. Louis into a storage bin up there. In 1 month. And so, yeah, but it's like, wow. And I was telling her, you know, with all this Corona stuff going on, and my dad is in the hospital now. He has another aneurysm on his heart. And so we got a lot of stuff going on. I was like, and there's a temptation of saying, you know, we're going to wait a little bit of time. We're going to do that. And Kelsey's response was, Kelsey's response, and I wrote it down because it was in a prayer, so I'm going to read it right now. We asked God, should we postpone leaving? And it was a resounding no. We go forward. We move. Right now, God is preparing hearts to hear his salvation. And it's more important, this was my wife talking, it's more important than our family's financial and physical stability is people finding salvation in Christ. What a joy it is to realizing that we are part of the cross, that we are his hands and feet in today's world. If we go bankrupt, if we get Corona, if he takes our health away and we even die, if we file for unemployment, it will still be worth it because of Jesus's grace. And I actually sent that to my fellow ministers today. Like, I appreciate your prayers in that, you know, of going.
That's awesome.
And so that's my wife. Like, and it is intimidating to be married to a woman like that. You know, where I come up and I'm like, oh, should we wait an extra week or a month? And she's like, we got to do God's will right now. And that's whether awesome. We either need to do this or not. And she didn't start out that way. I mean, you know, it was a lot of, I mean, you guys will get to know this about us. We fight in front of people pretty regularly. We have a very, I love her and we're very passionate about what we do. You know, she's the best mom I've ever seen. She helps me stay grounded, with the kids a lot. I think, you know, those things now, it's really easy to look back at those things that were hard and look at it and see how it's totally worth it, you know, of what God's done. And she would tell you the reason why it's easy for her to submit to a guy like me in that is because I'm submitting to Christ.
Right.
Because I'm submitting to Christ, it's easier for her to submit to me in doing this, you know. And so we trust God in this whole process, but we also, you know, in our marriage, I'd say that if God's right here on the top and we do this because we're live, you know, if he's at the top and we're down here, it's a triangle. The closer we get to God, the closer we get to each other.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the most important things is I make her that she's running towards the cross. I make sure that I'm running towards the cross. And as we're running to the cross towards each other, we get closer to each other in the process. And I tell single guys and single girls this, you want to know what you can do for your future spouse, get close to Jesus right now.
Yeah.
You know, be that person right now that gets close to him and submits to him and does his will, because that is what, that's the most beautiful thing in the world. And so.
Yeah. And to add to that, you know, that just because then it kind of has a ripple effect on your kids because then they have better relationship with God and then with their future spouses.
Yeah. My kid is one of the best evangelists. he's never met a stranger, one, which is also kind of dangerous. But anyway, you know, he's never met a stranger. But he loves, he's already talking about, Dad, I want to bring people to that church with the train. That's how he identifies the church with the crossings, you know, with the train, you know, with all the train tracks. He's like, it's just so neat. The people there are awesome. And he loves Jackson Cox, which I don't understand why. One of his personal heroes. You know? And, you know, you're looking at that and going, wow. And, oh, you're right.
Yeah. Sorry, Clint went frozen there again. Okay, now you're good. Well, just kind of wrapping things up, you know, so I'm going to ask you a question here in a second, but we kind of mentioned that. Yeah. So like for our listeners out there, or watchers, you know, you and Kelsey and the family will be moving, you know, to St. Louis to work with the Crossings and to just help plant some churches, which is really cool. Which I think really is a testament to just how you have seen God work in your life, and just, you know, you do have just an incredible story. And, you know, you would only kind of resort to doing that because you've just seen God work in really powerful ways. And there really would be no other reason or explanation for that, you know. So it's really cool, and we're really excited.
Frozen.
Am I good now?
There we go. So one question that we really like to ask our guests coming on the show. So knowing all that, and you've been through a lot, you've had a lot of different experiences, you know, knowing all that you know now, what would you tell your younger self whenever you needed to take the most?
Whoa. Okay. what would I tell my younger self? That is a great question. I think I'd start off by because it was such a realization to me, such a revelation, can't say realization, that's what we're going with. Is that, you know, what you're going through is not beyond what Christ understands. You know, I used to think for the longest time I was unique and Christ couldn't understand me because of this or that or whatever. And now I realize that, nah, man, you know, and I would love to also tell him to one, I'm going to be very, I used to do a fake British accent that was terrible. Knock it off. I would like to tell him, I would like to tell him from an early time, you're going to look good with a beard. You just need to get through the first 6 weeks. I would like to tell him, I would like to tell him that, you know, that there are people that aren't going to hurt you. I'd like to tell him that you need to understand the people in your life. You need to understand them and not hate them. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a few, but I think ultimately what I would tell younger 10-year-old, and I think it goes back to every age, but if I would have told 10-year-old me, I wouldn't say anything. I would just be there and hug them. Mm-hmm. Because that was some of the most loneliest times of my life. And going, just tell them I got you. You know, you're okay. You're going to be okay. And saying that right now just gives me chill bumps and tears. Because I think if I could say anything to my older self, it'd be the 10-year-old me going, you're going to be okay.
Yeah, so, for sure.
Oh, gosh, guys, you got me crying. Don't even do that. Don't do that again.
That's all right. Before we go, Matt, James, Ryan, you guys got anything you want to add?
Me and Clint have a pretty good relationship. We have some conversations that are pending over some sushi, so we're good.
Nice.
It's true. I'm looking forward to it.
Yep.
I just want to say thanks for coming on, Clint. And, I mean, through all this, like, you know, we still got to see each other's faces, you know. It helps us get through the days. So,
yeah.
Right. Quarantine isn't so bad. So.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, this has actually been really cool because, you know, while we've kind of been, I mean, we would have had to have resorted to this either way because, you know, you're not in Missouri, but, you know, this has been cool because, you know, I can definitely see, you know, just other people that we'd love to talk to and have a conversation with that live farther away. Like, this was kind of a cool, like, testing ground in a sense, but, you know, I have heard Matt just talk about you a lot and he does love like the CMU like family. And you're one of those guys that he always speaks highly of. And I've just loved like watching you, just over the last 6 years, you know, just every year, just getting to hear you speak. And I actually didn't know that you were an actor or that you did. I don't know if you would be called that or not, but you did some acting in the past. But whenever I thought of you and how you spoke and then everyone else in the campus are like, I just love Clint because I could never fall asleep during one of his during one of those. The most animated guy. And then once you told, once I heard about your past, I'm like, that makes sense, because it's kind of, you're the animated side of you just kind of comes out. So I don't know. It's just been a pleasure getting to know you.
Thanks.
You know, listen to you speak.
Thanks, man. Yeah. Thank you, brother. That means a lot.
Yeah. Thank you for taking some time out of your quarantine life to talk with us. And thank you, Matt and Ryan and James, as always. It's been a lot of fun. So.
All right. Appreciate you guys.
Yeah. All right. We will see everyone later.
Are you going to do proper ending?
Yeah, we're your proper ending.
Okay, girl. Yeah. So hold on. Yeah, just scratch that. So on behalf of myself, let's see, what do I say now? On behalf of myself and the team, this is
us signing off.
Signing off. Okay. All right.
All right.
All right.
Nice.
All right. Bye, everybody. Bye. How do I leave? I'll leave.
Grandpa.
So by now, your coffee cup is probably pretty low, so I'll keep this short. Thank you for listening in. Make sure you hit the subscribe button and leave a comment. We'd love to hear how these stories are impacting your life. For more content like this, you can follow us at Brewing Narrative on Facebook and Instagram.